Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, H.J. Heinz Company, maker of the famous Heinz 57 varieties, presents Information Please, with four experts ready and willing to answer your questions. Mail them to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. We may edit them slightly. In case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment as to the question we use. If we do use it, you'll get, with the compliments of H.J. Heinz Company, $10 in war stamps and the Encyclopedia Britannica World Atlas. If the experts flop on your question, H.J. Heinz Company sends you $57 in war bonds and stamps and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And don't forget that if the experts should miss all three parts of your question, you get, in addition to the Encyclopedia Britannica, a $500 war bond instead of the usual $57. All questions remain our property. Information, Please, is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenthal. And now, here's our master of ceremonies, Clifton Fadiman.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, Information, Please, as spontaneous and as unrehearsed as ever, springs up with its two stalwarts, John Kieran and Franklin P. Adams, who welcome their two guests. First, Miss Jan Struther, poet and author of Mrs. Miniver, and Mr. Russell Krause, better known since last week as Ruffled Grouse, co-author of Life with Father and co-producer of the new Broadway hit, The Hasty Heart. Mr. Krause, by the way, is amiably pinch-hitting for us this evening for Miss Faith Baldwin, who was unable to join us this evening. By the way, did you get any letters from bird lovers, Miss Krause?
Several from birds. Birds have spoken to me very harshly about the Ruffled Grouse. They don't want me to be identified with their family.
Try this one, gentlemen. This comes from John Cromey of Los Angeles, California. We'll start with it. Identify these quotations. Get two out of three. They all have the word do in them, the simple word do. And the first is do or die, but the die is pronounced D, as if it were D-E-E. Do or D. Mr. Kieran.
And for Bonnie Annie Laurie, I would lay me doon and D.
I didn't say doon.
Well, down and
D. No, did I say down? I said do or D.
Or D.
Do or D.
Oh.
That's a nice quotation, Mr.
Yeah.
Kieran. We'll save it. Do or D.
Would it be from the same poet, Burns?
Yes.
Is it from Scott Swahey where Wallace bled?
It is indeed.
I thank you.
That's quite right. Lay the proud usurpers low, tyrants fall in every foe, liberties in every blow, let us do or D. Now, do this way and that. How would you identify that quotation? Do this way and that. Mr. Adams?
I wouldn't identify it.
Stubborn.
Is it from a song?
That's right, Mr. Krause. That's right.
It rings a bell, but I can just
not
faintly hear the bell.
Just run the song through you. Mr. Adams?
Is it, I'll Learn You to Waltz?
I don't know how that goes. Do you?
Something about balance like me, do this way and that way, I'll...
That sounds good.
Learn You to Waltz.
I like it, but that isn't the one I have. The one I have down here is... Did you ever see a lassie do this way and that way? Did you ever see a lassie do this way and that? Miss Struther, did you ever play that as a child's game when you were a child?
No, I don't know that one.
You're the nearest to childhood of all of us. That's one wrong. Now, the third quotation consists simply of the phrase, do, do, do. Where would you find that, Mr. Krause?
From George Gershwin.
You would indeed. What's the song called?
Do, do, do what you done before,
that's
baby.
That's the one. That's the one, Mr. Krause. Well, that gives us two out of three. Try this from Sonia Bleeker of Fort Washington, Long Island. And get all, it's not too hard a question. What is an inhabitant of these places called? If you lived in Glasgow, you'd be called a what? Miss Struther?
Glaswegian.
A Glaswegian. Why should you be?
Well...
Why not a Glasgowian?
I wouldn't know.
Neither would I. Well, that's as much as we require to know on this program, that you'd be called a Glaswegian. Now, if you lived in Liverpool... We must give someone else a chance, Miss Struther.
Well, she's lived all of those places.
Well, Miss Struther, we have
a
to
depend on... A Liverpudlian.
A Liverpudlian, yes. And you have no explanation of that mystery?
Well, pool, puddle.
I suppose it's easier to say that than Liverpoolian or Liverpooler. Now, suppose you lived in Michigan. What would you be called? Mr. Adams?
You would be called either a Wolverine or a Michigander.
Either a Wolverine or a Michigander, yes. Well, sometimes a Michiganite, I imagine that's been used, too.
Never.
Am I misinformed?
You're misinformed. I went to school in Ann Arbor, and you were a Michigander.
All right. So I will leave out Michiganite. I don't know where we got this information that... People who come from Michigan are called Michiganites. We'll call them Michiganders from now on. I'll try this one from Richard L. Moss of Los Angeles, and again, get all. Identify the plays about war. All of these plays deal with war. in which persons of these ranks were the principal figures. In the first case, a captain and a sergeant. Mr. Krause.
That was Buck Price Glory.
That's quite right.
By Lawrence Stallings and Maxwell Anderson, Captain Flagg and Sergeant Quirk.
Quite right. Those immortal characters from the last war. And now, Major and General. A play in which a major and general are two important characters. Yes, Miss Crother.
Well, Major Barbara and the General Bulls, Salvation Army. So those are the account of war.
Major, yes, that's rather clever. I hadn't thought of that. It doesn't deal with any particular war, does it?
War against evil, my dear man.
Yes, we have never had quite so moral a note struck on this program. I meant rather a specific war, Miss Brother, though now that's a very clever answer, and I'll accept it. Can you think of any other? A play about the current war.
About this war with a major?
Yes, a major and a general appear in it, or important in it, Miss Kieran.
A bell for a Dano.
Yes, the bell for a Dano.
Major Cipollo and... I've forgotten the general's name.
General Marvin. Actually, he's an offstage voice in the play version. He's a somewhat more important character in the novel from which the play came. General and Ensign appear in a play dealing in part with war, though it deals with many other things, too, Mr. Krause.
I am not quite sure on this, but as much as we've got two already. Was it the Lawrence Stallings play this year? What was the title of it?
Offhand, I should say no, and I don't remember the title.
Then let's forget the title.
Maybe we hadn't better bring it up at all. We haven't hit all on this, gentlemen. Now, Mr. Adams, did you have a guess?
No, I have no idea.
Well, it's in Othello. The general is General Othello, and the ensign is Miss Kieran.
Oh, ensign?
The ensign is Iago.
Iago?
Yes.
Well, he's as ancient.
Well, that's the same thing as an ensign.
Oh, I doubt that. But all right, go ahead. Ancient is his tightly.
Yes,
his
but
eye,
he,
his lordship.
Isn't
lord
that the same thing as an ensign, Mr. Krause?
Well, to make up for the one we missed, there's one about a colonel and a colonel and a sergeant, the Hasty Heart. If we could just kind of toss that in for the one we missed, you know.
Toss? You threw that in? From backfield.
Unplugged.
That gives us only two out of three. That means that Heinz 57 sends $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mr. Moss and a set of the Britannica, and we pass on to a question from Hartzell Lincoln Dake of Washington, D.C. Get two out of three. Interesting question. How have the following foods been used as external beauty treatment? The first food is beetroot. Beetroot. It's been used, apparently, as a beauty treatment. Under what? How? What sort of beauty treatment, Miss Brother?
I would say that it was an old form of nail dye.
You would?
Am I supposed to say that or something else?
I don't know. Well, maybe it was used as a nail dye.
Is that related to orris root in any way?
Who?
Orris root, because that's used as for bleaching hair. Is beetroot anything like orris
root?
Not
a bit.
Something like elegy.
Now, let's stick to one root at a time. Beetroot was used in the 18th century in this country as a rouge. Now, it might have been used as a nail polish, too, Mr. Strother. I don't know. Do you remember, Mr. Adams?
No, that's a little before my time.
But not much.
How about a raw egg? How has that been used as a beauty treatment, Mr. Adams?
Shampoo.
Shampoo, perfectly right, as a scalp treatment. It still is it not, if you can get them?
Not in my house, we eat them.
And here, finally, this is hard to believe, but apparently horseradish and sour milk can be used as a beauty treatment, or have been used, Mr. Crowe?
I think I've heard of that one. I haven't used it. I think the formula was grated horseradish in cold, sour milk, and then you strain it and let it stand and use it as a face cream.
Why? Why do you do that?
I don't. I'm beautiful without that.
When was all this done?
Oh, I should say back in the 60s.
Back in the 60s. I have it as back in the 90s. But
in the 90s?
You're right. Yes.
I remember it from the 60s.
Apparently was, as Mr. Krause reminds us, used as a skin lotion many, many years ago. And that does give us two out of three. Now here's our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer, who has a way of digging up quotations that might have been written especially for his favorite food.
Here's one I've always liked, and it was never more true than now. I believe it was Oliver Goldsmith who said, "Blessed be those feasts with simple plenty crowned." When you start thinking back, it is the simple meat and potato dinners you do remember enjoying most. Crowned with plenty so you could have second helpings if you wanted them. And if you started counting how many of those dinners started off with Heinz real cream of tomato soup, the number would really add up. For that's always been a favorite soup, a favorite way of dressing up a meal. It's a soup that sounds simple, tomatoes and cream. But when those two flavors mingle in the luscious, delicately spiced depths of Heinz condensed cream of tomato soup, there just is no greater treat to the taste. Heinz tomatoes are not just any tomatoes. They're especially grown for flavor and juice. And the cream is thick and rich. Heinz soups are condensed, you know. You just add an equal quantity of water or milk. So when you want real cream of tomato, brimming with fresh tomato flavor, ask for Heinz condensed cream of tomato soup.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer. And now how about going on with this one from Sam Hutt of New York and get all on this? It's a musical question, Mr. Other and gentlemen. Can you name the philosophers mentioned in the following songs? Probably in their titles. Let's have the first, Mr. Carr. I have Miss Kieran's hand at once on that.
John Stuart Mill.
That's quite right.
Down by the old mill stream.
That's right. Who was John Stuart Mill?
He was an English philosopher and economist and had a lot of theories of political economy.
Yes, more or less the early part of the 19th century.
1846.
Flourished or born or died, would you say?
Flourished.
I think about that term, Mr. Adams. Quite right. And as you probably know, his father, by a coincidence similarly named Mill, was also a famous philosopher. Now the second of the songs, Mr. Kahn. Mr. Kahn?
One of the locks.
That's right.
You don't mean to tell me you're pronouncing Loch Lock?
That's on this program, we're pronouncing Loch Lock.
Where is my dead body?
If you will just stay alive for about another 12 minutes, Mr. Rother, you may do whatever you wish after this program is over. Couldn't you say, we say hastily Loch Lomond over here. How do you say it?
Loch.
Well, you know, maybe John Loch was John.
John Loch on the human understanding?
Yes. Yes, we're referring to John Loch. When did he flourish, Mr. Adams, would you say?
I don't know. I never saw him.
1632 to 1704, a famous English philosopher. And now the third and last, Mr. Kahn. I have Mr. Krause's hand.
Thomas Mann, would you call him a philosopher?
Well, it's arguable. He's a very great novelist and has written some philosophical essays.
The song was Can't Stop Loving That Thomas Mann of Mine.
You've got the right song, all right, Mr. Krause, Miss Brother.
Can't or can't.
How do you say, yes?
Can't.
So, yes. Who was he?
A philosopher.
A philosopher. Nationality?
German.
First name Emmanuel.
Well, yes. Would it tell me? Live in Switzerland?
No, I think he lives in Königsberg, a place that's been in the news recently, over most of his life. And his dates, care to flourish him, Mr. Adams?
Long ago.
Long ago, 1724 to 1804. Famous German philosopher, Kant, or Kant, as you say. Mr. Other helped loving that man. How about this one from Helen Stillman in New York City? Where in literature or the theater does a man win for himself a woman's love while wooing her for another? It's kind of tough to follow the plot. Mr. Kieran?
Win a woman's love, but that's John Alden wooing her for Miles Standish.
Priscilla. Wooing for Miles Standish, yes.
He won her himself. He hit the jackpot.
Yes. Whom is he wooing?
Priscilla... Well...
Mullins.
Mullins,
that's
yes.
That's right.
Priscilla Mullins. Here is a even more complicated plot. A woman wins a man's love while wooing another woman for him. One more W and I would be broken on that sentence. Mr.
might be Cyrano de Bergerac.
No, I see what you're thinking of, but it isn't quite the same situation. It's very complicated.
Not on the nose, though.
Try it. I'll read it again. A woman wins a man's love while wooing another woman for him.
Isn't that in As You Like It?
You have the right author.
Oh, Twelfth Night.
That's right. Twelfth Night, yes. It's Viola, perhaps many of us remember, disguised as a page. She wins the Duke while wooing Olivia for him. He of course, gets fond of his page and eventually discovers that she's been in disguise all along and they marry and presumably live happily ever after. I can't count you right on that. How about this? Now, we have to get this one right. A girl wins a man's love while entertaining him for her friend. Mr. Kieran.
That is The Voice of the Turtle.
Yes.
Elliot Nugent and Florence Rice and I've forgotten the third girl's name. She was very good, and I'm very sorry.
Audrey Christie, and she is
Audrey Christie, very good indeed. Miss Strother, did you have something to add to that?
No.
That's of course, the plot of John Van Druten's delightful play, The Voice of the Turtle, now running on Broadway. And that gives us 2 out of 3. And send us on to Mrs. Flynn's question, Mr. John W. Flynn of Sawyer, Michigan. Mrs. Flynn is a well-known Michigander. That's right. She goes. Mention at least 3 well-known people. These must be real persons whose names might commonly occur in the conduct of your business if you were managing a hotel. Now think of anything connected with a hotel that would also give us the last name of some well-known people, Mr. Krause.
Well, a clerk.
You have to give him the name of the person. Has to be a well-known person. Doubtless there is somebody named Clark who is well-known, Miss Strother.
I have a different one.
Very good.
Robert W. Service.
Robert W. Service, yes. Quite
not
right.
Not many hotels.
Well, you can ask for it.
Now, that gives us one. Mr. Krause.
Well, Sir Francis Toll, if you pronounce it Towel.
Sir Francis Toll, if you pronounce it
He's
Towel.
He's a big hotel man in England, isn't he, Ben?
Is that right, Mr. Strother?
I don't know.
Well, I don't know how I've always called it Toll, but I hope he calls it Towel.
I don't know. We're in trouble with loss already, Mr. Krause. Haven't got much margin. Oh, a couple more, gentlemen. There's the president of the very excellent college down at Annapolis, St. John's College. His name is Mr. Stringfellow Barr. And you have a bar and a hotel, a properly run hotel. Mr. Kieran, think of any others? I really have only one good one from Egypt, Mr. Adams.
Hall, Jack Hall.
Who is Jack Hall?
He was quite a boy in a song.
That's true, but it has to be a real person, Mr. Adams. I'm sorry to be severe.
Samuel Hall.
He's in a song, too. He's in a song. The Darn Your Eyes man?
Yeah.
He's in a song.
Well, as Jerry Hall, he lives down in Lions Plains.
Well, he's well known to Westernites. There's a former motion picture actress, I believe, named Blanche Sweet. No?
Yeah. Pauline Hall.
Pauline?
John Hall, the motion picture actor. Yes, that really gives us... Oh, you have one more. Come, Mr. Strother and gentlemen. Sharpen your wits against each other. Mr. Krause.
William Penn.
Well, that's the name of the hotel.
All right, it's the name of something you find in a hotel.
With luck.
Just under the wire. Oh, there are lots. Edgar Guest, perhaps. Cole Porter. Francis Scott Key. I just rattle these things off as fast as I can read them. H.P. Scratchley of Asheville, North Carolina, sends this one in. What was the first occasion, prominent in history, when revolutionists were identified with a particular kind of haircut? There are going to be 3 questions of a somewhat similar order. Mr. Adams.
The Roundheads.
The Roundheads, quite right. Who were the Roundheads, Mr. Adams?
The either the Cromwellites or the non-Cromwellites.
Well, the Cromwellites, under Cromwell, yes. They were against Charles I, the Puritan group. Would that be right, Mr. Strother?
That's right.
Approximately,
they cut their hair to show they were different from the long-haired cavaliers.
Yes, and also because they wanted to be plain and simple, perhaps, as against
hygienic.
Yes, I don't know whether it worked out very well. How do you say that word?
Hygienic.
Lock to you. Hygienic, we say. Now, what was the first occasion in history when revolutionists were identified with a particular kind of trouser? We've had a haircut. Now, how about trouser? Miss Grubber.
I think it was the French Revolution.
It was indeed. Why? Can you tell us the story of it?
Because they didn't wear them.
Oh, yes, they did.
Well, why were they called the sans-culottes, then?
Oh, yes, but they wore trousers. Many things
lock again. Sans-culottes.
Sans-culottes. I thought you put the S in it.
No.
I beg your pardon.
Why don't you be friendly on this program?
I think they have them in this war.
Who has what in this war?
Article of clothing.
What?
How about the Panzer Division?
Well, that's what they mean by a divided skirt, the Panzer Division. The trousers were the rebels in the French Revolution, as Miss Brother and Mr. Kieran together inform us, were known as sans-culottes. They wore trousers such as we now wear. Not you, Miss Brother, but the rest of us. Instead of the breeches or short pants, which were the mark of the upper classes. Now, how about an occasion in history when revolutionists were associated with a kind of shirt? The first time, gentlemen, Mr. Krause.
Garibaldi's red shirt.
That's quite right.
You know where he got the idea, Mr. Adams?
I beg your pardon?
Do you know where he got the idea of
no,
the red shirt?
Is.
Right here in New York, the volunteer fire department. He had been here and went back to Italy and took the red shirt with him.
He did?
That's really true.
Well, I never knew that.
I swear.
I noticed, by the way, Mr. Krause, that since Garibaldi, you yourself have never worn a white shirt.
That's right.
It's true. You have on a blue shirt this evening.
That's right. I also have red shirts in honor of Garibaldi.
Love to see you in them sometime. Well, that gets his hair cut, trousers, and shirt. Now let's hear from that man with a hungry gleam in his eye, our Hines reporter, Ben Growler, who, as I understand it, is about to carry us back to old Virginia in pursuit of a sauce.
You mean that delicious barbecue sauce I was talking about? Well, I guess the idea of it does date back to the old South, back to the days of the barbecue masters. Often they'd arrive in a donkey cart, bringing bundles of fragrant woods for the fire and a little treasure chest of spices for the glorious hot sauce that was swabbed over and over again on the roasting meat. Especially now, with meat rationing, we can make good use of a fine barbecue sauce. It goes great on hot dogs, you know, and on hamburgers and broiled chicken, too. There's a humdinger of a barbecue sauce in the new Heinz recipe booklet, 57 Ways to Use Heinz Condensed Soups. This sauce is made in double-quick time with a can of Heinz Condensed Cream of Tomato Soup. You know you get out of a lot of fuss and work when you use Heinz Condensed Soups in making sauces. They're great little shortcuts to fine eating. You'll find dozens of bright ideas incorporated into the 57 tested recipes in the new Heinz recipe booklet, 57 Ways to Use Soups. Pick up a copy next time you go to the grocery store. It's yours for the taking.
Thank you, Mr. Grower. Try this one now. M.T.M.F. Scott of Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts, sends this one in. What word is the poet referring to in these quotations, all of which have to do with words? The first quotation is, one word is too often profaned. And what is the word that he means in that quotation, Mr. Adams?
Love.
Love is quite right. And you'll be quoting in that case from what poem, Mr. Adams?
One word is too often profane for me to use it, something like that.
Well, you've simplified it. For me to profane it.
For me to profane it.
One feeling too falsely disdained for thee to disdain it. And it's a poem by Percy Bysshe Shelley, and it's called To Blank. Some girl that he knew by the name of Blank. That's what it says here. I haven't filled in the name. Now, here's another quotation. There is no such word. And now, if you fill in the quotation, you know what word it is. Mr. Adams again.
Fail.
Fail is absolutely right. And where, what would you be quoting from, Mr. Adams?
You would be quoting for something that is misquoted about the bright lexicon of youth.
That's absolutely
right. It
doesn't
go like that at all.
And shall we determine what it does go like, or shall we misquote it again?
In that lexicon which youth reserves for a bright manhood, there is no such word as fail.
That's approximately right. At any rate, it's nearer than the other misquotation. In the lexicon of youth which fate reserves for a bright manhood, there is no such word as fail. And I bet not very many of us would know where that very famous quotation comes from. Mr. Kieran, any idea? Mr. Adams, care to guess?
No, I think it's practically the only thing he ever said.
He said one other thing. He said, things would be terrible without cooks. We can do without whatchamacallem, do without books, but something or other can't do without cooks. Who was it?
Was that an Englishman?
It was indeed.
Culver Lytton.
And this quotation
Owen Meredith.
Well, this is from Richelieu. His play Richelieu. Now, there's one more of these word quotations. Very simple one. Three little words. Three little words, and what are the words that are being referred to?
The words are I love you, and it came into a song.
That's quite right. What's the song called?
Three little words.
Three little words. Can you go on with it, Mr. Krause? Can you?
No,
but I know who wrote it.
By a woman.
Who wrote it?
Palmer and Ruby wrote it.
Yeah, three little words. So what I'd give for that wonderful phrase, three little words, eight little letters, which simply mean I love you. There's not a rhyme in that entire song so far. Three little words, that gives us three out of three and sends us on to this question from Mr. George Goldfarb of New York. How did these phrases originate? Get two out of three. To walk the chalk line. We've often used the phrase, to walk the chalk line. Mrs. Scrubber?
I think it's what they do to see if you're drunk.
Yeah, to see if one is drunk.
See,
a better way of
saying
it.
I beg your pardon. See if one is drunk.
Mr. Adams?
I think that's the secondary use of it.
Well, that's quite right. But how? No, that is the usage of it. But what was the origin of it? Where was it first? Under what circumstance was it first used?
I think it might come from piracy or ship.
You're very near to it. It was used aboard ship as a test for drunkenness. Now, how about this one? This is an even better known phrase, to show the white feather. We all know what that means. What's the origin of it? To show the white feather. We know it means cowardice, an indication of cowardice. Mr. Crowe?
I'll take a guess. I think it was a signal of truth, wasn't it?
No, it's a good guess. Intelligent, and that's about all I can say, but it's wrong. It's a phrase from cockfighting, from the cockpit. No gamecock has any white feather because it indicates a cross breed in birds. Is that perfectly clear, Mr. Kieran? Did you know that?
I did not.
Well, we all learn. That's one wrong. To win his spurs is a very common phrase. Mr. Kieran?
That was the spurs were buckled on to a young knight when he was made a knight. That was one of the ceremonies that went with it. So.
Yes. Who gave them his bird?
Well, generally, the young lady to whom he was...
Well, the person who dubbed him. Perhaps it might have been that woman.
Well, the young lady was allowed to buckle him on.
I think that's right. Now, try this one. This is a one-part question, really. Very interesting one from Blinden Van Dusen of Rochester, New York. How are these political symbols related to each other? The symbols are the elephant, the donkey, and the tiger. All well-known political symbols. How are they related? In what way?
Do you mean as animals?
Well, we know they're animals. We know what they represent. But they have one thing in common.
They appear at the head of a ticket.
Well, that's not what I mean. Mr. Adams? Well, it's perhaps a tricky question. They were all the creation of a single man. So, Mr. Adams?
Thomas Nast.
Thomas Nast is quite right. Flourished?
In the 70s.
No, a little later. Wrong century. You're just 100 years out. 1840 to 1902. Well, I guess we got that wrong. That means time 57 cents. $57 to Mr. Van Dusen and a set of the Britannica. And that's all we'll have time for. Thank you, Mr. Strother and Mr. Krause, for adding to the fund this evening. Tonight, Heinz 57 has paid out $114 in war bonds and stamps and two sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Next week, Mr. Curran and Mr. Adams will be on hand to welcome their guests, two distinguished leaders of the theater, the playwright Mark Hart and the actor Clifton Webb. Remember, send your questions and the correct answers to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. And now our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer, who has a suggestion for every woman who plans meals, after which he will give you the news headlines of the moment.
Art is long and time is fleeting. And that goes for the art of cooking, too. But you'll discover many excellent shortcuts to good eating in the new Heinz recipe booklet, 57 Ways to Use Heinz Condensed Soups. Your copy is waiting for you at your grocer's. It's yours for the asking, with the compliments of Heinz 57 varieties. Hear the latest headlines from the NBC newsroom. President Roosevelt tonight appealed to the nation to support him in his nomination of Henry Wallace for Secretary of Commerce. American Third Army troops have smashed across the Oder River into Germany at five points. Russian troops, that's the Oder River rather, Russian troops are within 93 miles of Berlin, 57 miles of Stettin, and 4 miles of Königsberg. And the RAF tonight launched a heavy raid on the German capital. And now, until next Monday night at the same time, H.J. Heinz Company wishes you good health and good evening.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.